Welcome to the M2I Alternative Investments Chat, where we demystify the world of alternative investments and financing for entrepreneurs and investors alike. With these discussions, we hope you're more empowered to unlock opportunities in your business or portfolio. Hello and welcome to today's episode of M2I Alternative Investment Chat. My name is Erin and this is my co-host Erica. Today is the first episode in a three-part series where we will be covering commodities. To start off today, we'll be talking about oil and gas.
I love that. So energy continues to be a pivotal asset class in alternative investments. Investors seek this asset class to do what they do with all the other ones, diversify that portfolio. Energy has shown a resilience in the face of economic fluctuations, so it makes it, you know, sense that since we require energy for everything, our houses, our computers, our studio, everything needs energy these days. Right. So again, if you enjoy this episode, please tune in the future for the next two of that three-part series.
Okay, so let's kick this off by talking about the front runner in energy, which is oil and gas. As we know, we use oil and gas for everything. We are mostly reliant on oil and gas, which means that there is consistent global demand for this commodity. Mm-hmm. And because of that, oil and gas has really set the stage for energy investing. And as countries continue to urbanize and industrialize, the reliance upon oil and gas continues to increase.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
Like you said, everyone needs some.
Right, exactly, at this point in time.
Yeah.
Oil and gas is attractive to investors for a couple of reasons. As you mentioned, diversification, which is always the attractive, you know, component of any sort of alternative investment.
Yeah.
And also the potential for stable cash flows, which we'll get into. As we know, market volatility can create both risks and opportunities for these kinds of investments. Things like geopolitical and supply constraints. Prices are often influenced by geopolitical events, supply disruptions, like natural disasters, conflicts. You have to remember that oil and gas is being taken from the earth.
Yeah.
So if there is any sort of natural disaster that occurs in that area, that can greatly affect the supply that we have.
That makes sense.
And also production decisions from organizations like the OPEC. These dynamics create periods of volatility, but they can also provide opportunities for the alternative investors to capitalize on price swings and market imbalances, which is interesting. So also in periods of inflation, which inflation is a big buzzword right now, energy prices tend to increase during inflationary periods. So when you are filling up your gas at the pump, I'm sure you've noticed during inflationary periods that it's way more expensive.
Oh yeah, because it used to be $10 and now it's $25 and I don't understand why.
Exactly. But that can actually be an advantage for people who invest in energy because they can profit off of those higher prices during inflationary periods. Also, another thing to consider is regulatory and policy changes. We know that there is a push to reduce our reliance on oil and gas and also to find cleaner energy sources, which stay tuned for a later episode in which we'll cover that.
Yes.
But in the future, oil and gas may be subject to new government regulations and new policies that might affect our ability to continue to drill it for more oil and therefore profit off of it as well.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of the history and the background of oil and gas. So let's talk about the different investment types that are available to investors within this asset class. So there are direct drilling projects. It is just what it sounds like. So investors participate in the financing of oil and gas exploration and production, E&P. So there's definitely potential for high returns within this. If a drilling project is successful and oil is found, reminds me of like, the Beverly Hillbillies where they accidentally find oil on their land, the return can be huge. So investors benefit from income from this production. So all this means is that they receive a percentage of the gross revenue from the sale of that oil or gas after, of course, you have to divvy out the operational costs and the royalties and all of that stuff. With everything, there are some risks. So there is a high failure rate. So according to industry estimates, one out of every three wells, which that's kind of a lot, drilling may not produce enough to justify the installment.
Right.
So some wells can actually produce nothing. Even if experienced operators are the ones drilling, sometimes, you know, you just get nothing.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right.
And then there are always production declines. So even a successful well has experienced a natural decline in production. Isn't it a phrase like when the well dries up?
Yeah, exactly. It's a finite resource. You can drill and one place might produce oil for a longer period of time. Other wells might only produce for a shorter period of time. But in the end, it does decline.
It has to. I mean, it's not an endless supply. So it just means that the income generated from that well will diminish over time, like we talked about. And the well may eventually become, you know, uneconomical to operate. So that's why we see some of those out in the desert. You see those just little guys sitting out there, those little soldiers just hanging tight because they got nothing underneath them to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So what are a couple different ways that you can invest? You can invest in royalties on oil and gas. To start off, what's a royalty? Let's just cover that.
And we're talking about like in the music biz when you get a royalty. Every time I hear
kind
the word royalty,
yeah,
that's what I think of.
Yes, very similar. It's payments that are made to landowners, mineral rights holders, or royalty owners when oil and gas is extracted from that property. As an investor, you can have royalty interest, or RI, and this is ownership of the rights to receive a portion of the revenue from the sale of oil and gas. Mm. So what is the benefit of this? Royalties are a passive income source. We've talked a lot about passive income sources on this pod. It's very intriguing for people or attractive to have a constant stream of revenue that they don't really have to do anything. The investor doesn't have to manage the actual drilling of the oil. They don't have to have anything to do with the production process. All that they get is a check.
Yeah, I'm like, they collect the money.
Right, exactly. And that can be really attractive to people. And also, there is a commodity price risk that's associated. Royalty income is directly tied to the price of oil and gas because it's based on what you sell. So if the price is higher, the royalties are higher. If the price is lower, the royalties are lower. A significant decline in commodity prices can reduce the income generated by the wells. So if we're thinking about a time when gas is super cheap, then the people who are have royalties on oil and gas are not going to be making as much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the time that most consumers want the gas is when it is cheaper,
unfortunately. Right, exactly. So if it drops below a certain threshold where extraction becomes uneconomical, like you mentioned, they might not want to continue production.
Got it. So there's also energy focused funds for investing as well. Mm-hmm. So similar to investing in royalties, investing in oil and gas through the energy fund provides the opportunity to gain exposure to that energy market without directly owning, like you said, or managing those assets. Mm-hmm. This would be investing in energy through mutual funds or ETFs. Two concepts that we have talked a lot about in previous episodes. So benefit to investing this way is the built-in diversification. So ETFs and mutual funds typically hold a basket of companies in various sectors of the energy sector, helping them to reduce individual company risk. So again, you got a few more people helping out. It's not all on one person. So if the company doesn't make it, it's not one person losing everything. Or if the company goes huge, it's not one person gaining everything. Now, remember, there is, these ones are a lot more liquid than most asset classes.
Right.
But a drawback to this kind of investment could be the management fees and those expenses.
Right. Somebody else is managing your investment for you.
Yeah. And you got to put up that equipment to get that oil and gas out.
So. Yeah. That, and also you have, you know, fund managers that are helping diversify. That's an already diversified product. Somebody is putting together that product for you. So you have to pay for that.
Yep. Nothing's for free.
Nothing's for free. No free lunches.
No.
Overall, there are multiple ways to invest in oil and gas, and it's a huge opportunity for investors to diversify their portfolio and generate income. Potential for consistent cash flow is really attractive. Large oil and gas companies, like where you fill up at the pump, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Royal Dutch Shell, which is, you know, Shell. Not many people call it Royal Dutch Shell.
I think I'm going to start because that just sounds better.
It does. It sounds sounds fancy, like fancy gas, have long had histories of paying reliable dividends to their investors. So very attractive. And these companies are typically integrated. Mm-hmm. And this means that they are involved in the entire oil and gas supply chain. So not only just the drilling, but the exploration, the production, refining, and the distribution. And as a result, this can help them generate more stable revenues, which can be passed on to investors in the form of dividends. Obviously, if you have a company that is more profitable, typically the profits that the investor receives are going to be higher.
Yeah.
And even during periods of commodity price volatility, many large oil companies are able to maintain relatively steady dividend payments due to their diversified operations being involved in all aspects of the supply chain.
Not just this part, that like the itty bitties, it's all of it put together. So even if maybe the production is a little bit lower, all that they've produced, then they put in the refinement, then they it goes forward into our gas tank or wherever.
Yeah.
So they're still getting, you can still pay your investors.
Right, exactly.
Instead of just being like, oh, sorry, no gas.
Right. You're collecting money along the way. Exactly. Just like any other alternative asset class, the low correlation with other traditional asset classes in the market help make this a great opportunity for portfolio diversification.
Yeah.
So there is one oil and gas opportunity that we have not yet talked about, and that is mineral rights.
Yeah, so let's jump into that. So what are mineral rights? Mineral rights refer to the legal rights to explore, extract, and sell the minerals found beneath the surface of a specific piece of land. So these rights are separate from surface rights, which are just what they sound like, which are the rights to the land's surface and what's above it, such as buildings, crops, or infrastructure. When someone owns mineral rights, they have the legal authority to extract valuable resources from beneath the surface, including oil, natural gas, coal, precious metals, and whatever else they find underneath. Maybe there's some diamonds. Mineral rights can be severed from the land surface rights. So there can be one person who has the top, one person who has the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird and doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's the way it works. So, I mean, I want all of it, obviously. So, but that's actually very, very common practice for somebody to have the top and someone else have the mineral rights in the oil and gas industry.
Sure.
So mineral rights holders typically earn revenue from these resources through those great royalties or lease agreements with companies that extract or produce oil, gas, and minerals from the land. So these agreements give the lessee, so the person who has the extraction, the right to extract minerals in exchange for a share of the proceeds, typical in the form of royalties.
Very interesting. And a big part of the appeal here, again, is the potential for passive income. That's going to be just the ding, ding,
give
ding.
Give me that check.
Exactly. Passive income. We all want it. You mentioned royalties, again, which is when mineral rights owners are typically paid a percentage of the revenue that is generated from the production and sale of minerals, very similar to the royalties that we discussed earlier in this episode. The percentage is usually between 5 to 25% for oil and gas royalties, although it varies depending on the specific lease agreement, of course.
Yeah.
And this income is considered passive because owners don't need to be directly involved in the exploration, drilling, or production process. Instead, the operator, an oil, gas, or mining company, handles all of the operations while the mineral rights owner collects the income based on the production or the sale of the extracted minerals from that actual piece of land.
So I take back what I said. They can have, I just want the mineral rights.
Yeah,
they
that's, can do all that's
the
really.
They can do all the hard work. I'll just, again, collect the check.
Exactly. Royalty payments can continue for years or even decades, depending on the production. Like we mentioned before, depends on the land entirely. And this can create a relatively stable stream of income for years and years to come.
That's wild. So let's talk about mineral rights and ownership. Texas. That big old state over there is the most well-known and prosperous state in the U.S. For mineral rights ownership. There is one famous real world example. No, it's not the Beverly Hills Hillbillies. I keep wanting to bring them in here because that show just cracked me up when I was a kid. And I used to think that if I went in my backyard and dug a little bit, that I was going to strike gold like they did. It never happened.
Yeah, that's
why I have
cool.
a job today, unfortunately. This was the Wilkerson family. Mm. So this family owned land in the Eagle Ford Shale. It's a prolific oil-producing region in Texas, and it had mineral rights in the Permian Basin. So in 2013, the Wilkerson family struck a deal to lease their mineral rights to an oil and gas company for the development of the land's resources. Mm. With this, their mineral rights lease held an agreement to pay the Wilkersons 25% of the revenue generated from the oil proceeds on their land.
That's a big chunk.
That is a nice chunk. And as oil production ramped up in that area, the Wilkersons began receiving royalty checks that were well into the six figures.
Wow.
Annually.
Wow.
And in some months, their royal payments were $500,000, $500,000.
In 1 month.
In 1 month, just for their mineral rights. At one point, the Wilkersons reportedly were earning over $10 million in royalties from a single well in that Eagle Ford Shale. So this royalty income allowed them to invest in other ventures, mm-hmm. diversify their wealth, and maintain a sustainable income stream without needing to lift a finger in terms of operational management.
Wow.
They just had them the mineral rights. They said, here you go. We'll take a little chunky.
Yeah.
Do what you got to do.
Do what you will.
Do you, boo. Do you.
give me some money.
Exactly.
Well, that is a really inspiring story. I'm inspired. I want to be the next Wilkerson family.
Jeez, I know. Don't we
all. And that's all for today's episode. As we mentioned earlier, this is part one of a three-part series on commodities. So next episode, we'll be talking about fine art, collectibles, and more.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for more insight on our next episode, and don't forget to subscribe to continue the journey with MTY. See you next time.
Content provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as professional, financial, or investment advice. This podcast should not be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of any offer to buy any securities. We strongly recommend that you seek advice from a qualified professional before making any financial decisions.